Welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say, the title will go and explain everything for you. You see, it is a match made in heaven between animation and a podcast. And when you put these two things together, it's pretty much a ceremony, a wedding of a lifetime, with me conducting it as the sermon or the pastor or whoever, you know, the dude that says, I now pronounce you man and wife or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. But specifically, it's going to be about the news that happened this week. So, for example, on this episode, I am going to be looking into two big trailers that were released on the same day about two animated features that will be released next year. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the shortlist of what could potentially be the nominees for Best Animated Short in the Academy Awards. Then afterwards, we will be looking into an idiot who is finally going to freaking jail. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. Yet. And then afterwards, we will be looking into the first 9 minutes of The Last Guardian. And finally, we will be talking about Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, the first story that I have for you guys is going to be about two trailers regarding two animated features that actually have some very strong connections with one another, believe it or not, or at least some very strong similarities. What I'm talking about is that these two films are technically the third installment of a major movie franchise. Their trailers are both released on the same day. They're both animated films that are going to be released in 2017. And both their movie franchises, well, let's be honest, they're not really looked upon well. A lot of people would say that Cars and Cars 2 are kind of the weakest Pixar films. And as for the Smurfs and the Smurfs 2, well, that's kind of self-explanatory how they sucked. But specifically, in this case, maybe these trailers are going to turn both these franchises around. And I'm talking, of course, about Smurfs The Lost Village and Cars 3. Now, before I get into Cars 3, let me first off go into the big trailer, the one that revealed a lot more about what it's going to be, and that is Smurfs The Lost Village. Now, we have already gotten a teaser trailer of Smurfs The Lost Village before, which is only like 30 seconds, which is more of our introduction of what the animation style is going to be, what the characters are going to look like, how they move, and all that kind of stuff. And that's pretty much it. We didn't get a lot more out of it. But now we have received the full trailer of Smurfs Lost Village, which is going to give us a much better idea of what this movie is going to be. And from what I can see so far, I would actually say, well, so far it looks good. Not great, but you know what? It's good. That's probably the most positive thing that I could actually say about it. Or I'm sure a lot of people are actually shocked that this is coming from me, like the man who would constantly bash Sony Pictures Animation for the repeated amount of stupidity that they have caused, especially with the Emoji Movie. Like, you know, I am finally gonna give credit to Sony Pictures Animation that they are finally making something that looks good. At the very least that I could say about it is that, you know, at least when I'm watching this trailer of Smurfs The Lost Village, you know, I don't feel like an idiot watching it. I don't feel embarrassed watching something with such poor taste and such poor quality, you know? Like, this looks like this is going to be way better than what we've been offered from the previous, like, Sony Animation films. Like, this looks way better than the Hotel Transylvania films, especially better than the Claudy films, but most namely, this is going to be their best Smurf film, Hands down. Like, I think we can all agree on that by now. And I think the biggest thing that really left an impact is, hands down, the animation. You could tell that it's a lot more respectable to the Peyo design. Like, now they're sticking a lot closer to it and decided to scrap that more realistic looking bullcrap, which I gotta say, like, admittedly, I didn't have too much problems beforehand, like, when the Smurfs and the Smurfs 2 was released. Like, I find that, like, it's fine as it is, but, like, the more that you stare at it, the more creepier it is. Like, you know, it's kind of like the same kind of design that you would find in a Furby or, like, Teddy Ruxpin. Like, it looks fine, it looks okay at first, but then it gets a little creepy, especially, like, when they try to make the Smurfs a bit more realistic looking. It's a bit of a turnoff, in a sense. But with this one, now that they have released, like something that is computer animated, but it's much more respectable to the design that Peyo originally crafted, like, yeah, it just makes, it makes the Smurf, like, the designs from, like, the other Smurf movies look like total garbage. Now they look like in the qualities of Hotel Transylvania and Cloudy. They look like freaking garbage. But this one, I gotta say, it actually does look good. And one of the big things that I do notice is that since it is coming from Sony Animation, the animation style, like the character animation, it's a lot less cartoony than what you would get with Hotel Transylvania and Cloudy. Like, they really did tone down, and this is something that I truly appreciate. Like, it's like, it doesn't want to be so desperately cartoony in a sense. Like, you could tell that the focus is a lot less on trying to be a cartoon in a way. And that, at the very least, I do feel appreciative that they do take the, you know, that they are focusing a lot less on that and try to make it more like an actual feature, you know? That I feel truly appreciated. But on top of that, like, not only did they do a lot of improvements from their previous films, but I could definitely see that even with what was originally crafted for this movie, especially with the backgrounds and when they do enter upon the Lost Village and stuff like that, I will say that it does look pretty creative, I must say. It, you know, like, you could tell that they wanted to make this brightly colored and also very colorful land where, in a way, it's like what they want to try to pull off with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, but it's actually done well. It's actually done by real artists this time. other than that, it's, you know, it looks actually kind of impressive. And, you know, overall, I would say that this is ultimately what people would expect from a computer animated Smurfs movie in the first place. So at least in the animation department, they're capable of selling it. But there is one criticism that I do have with this, though, that I feel like this could be something that might turn off a lot of people, and that is regarding the humor. And with the humor, you could tell that a lot of it is trying to be a lot like many of the other modern animated features, where they will throw in a bit of subtle pop culture references, a lot of modernisms, and of course they're going to throw in a lot of, like, Smurf jokes. Like, there was at one point when one Smurf that's just taking therapy, and he's just there, it's like, sometimes I just feel blue, you know? Like, a lot of the jokes, I have to admit, they're kind of lame. Now, I'm not saying they're all lame, but there was actually one time that actually did make me laugh, and that's when Papa Smurf discovers that all the Smurfs are, some of the other Smurfs are pretty much gone, so, like, he would throw off the sheets from the bed, from the beds of the Smurfs, and they'll realize, like, they're just mock-ups. And then there's one that, like, he revealed that it's just, like, three apples, and one of them was eaten, and he's just looking there like, oh, come on, that's not even convincing. That, I have to admit, was actually pretty funny. And, of course, I guess this is going to be the big running gag that they're going to always advertise, is, you know, the eating flowers that they did with the teaser trailer, yeah, that looks like it's going to be prominent. And like, they even did the exact same thing in this, where like the big yellow flower was trying to eat Brainy Smurf, and like he tries to escape, but he's all like, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So I do feel like it's trying to repeat that a bit. So that could be my biggest turnoff, is that what I feel like Smurfs Lost Village could be is that, you know, it could turn out good. It could actually turn out to be an enjoyable film, but I feel like this is not going to be different from some of the recent animated films that we have gotten, you know. This looks like this could be in the same veins of something like the Angry Birds movie or Storks or Trolls. It's going to be somewhere in that level where it's going to be more of your common animated feature. So I don't know how it's really going to hold up in that front. Like, I'm sure they'll impress some critics, but not all of them. But the one thing I will say that could be more of a turn-on is the fact that it looks way better than what they did last time. So at least we're going to get a better Smurfs movie. And I think that's going to be like the big reward for many people. Like, in a way, some could say that this is going to be Sony Pictures Animation's apology for the Smurfs movie. So they're going to release something like this. Now, I'm not really expecting too much from it. Maybe it might turn out to be good. Maybe I'll get some laughs out of it and some nice animation as well. But overall, I definitely don't see this as something that a lot of people are going to put in their list among the best animated features of 2017. So overall, it could be good, but it looks like something that eventually, once the summer kicks in, or after a few months, or maybe after a month or two, when the Blu-ray and DVD is going to come out of Smurfs the Lost Village, like, people are just going to forget it and move on. So I don't know if this movie is really going to make a huge impact, especially in theaters. But in terms of that, we'll just have to wait and see. So that was the first trailer that we have gotten. But at the same time, right out of the blue, Pixar decided to come in and release our first ever look onto Cars 3. Now, let me start off by being very honest. Out of all the upcoming movies that Pixar has, I think Cars 3 is the least anticipated one. This is the one that nobody really gives a crap. And I think we can all agree that, you know, like, it's probably, like, Cars is probably the one that deserves the least to have a godforsaken trilogy, especially when Cars 2 is pretty much unanimously agreed to be the worst Pixar film of them all. Like, even I have to admit that, like, even, like, sure, the animation is very well done, but the story-wise and stuff like that, yeah, it kind of sucked. It's just, like, Mater's goofy spy adventures, you know? Like, it could have been just its own cartoon, but, like, why do they have to devote an entire freaking Pixar movie out of it? It's just dumb. So, yeah, like, everybody's pretty much aware that the Cars movies are not looked upon as well as the other Pixar movies, and I'm saying that in the nicest way possible. But very interestingly enough, it looks like the people at Pixar noticed that as well. You know, like, I actually even heard that apparently inside Pixar, they knew very well that Cars 2 pretty much sucked. So I'm pretty much guessing that there has to be this one guy at Pixar. He decided to step up and he told everybody around the world, okay, yeah, you don't like Pixar? Oh, no, sorry about that. You don't like Pixar. That's a lie. I'm sorry about that. Let me just restart that. Okay, so you don't like Cars? All right, we get it. You know, you're not excited for Cars 3. I understand that. So I guess you don't mind if we're going to do whatever we want with it. And you guys are still going to think that it's crap. You know, I understand that. All right, that's fine. Oh, well, you know, in that case, if you're not going to care about what we're going to do, then I suppose that you're not going to care if Lightning McQueen dies. And that's the one big thing that everybody's sharing. It's like, wait, what? What are you doing? Wait a minute. Excuse me? And that's pretty much what we gotten with this less than a minute teaser trailer of Cars 3, where the only thing that we see is just this race that's going on. We don't even see the faces of the cars. So we just see this race, no music whatsoever. And then suddenly we see Lightning McQueen. He spins out of control. And then the next shot, we just see slow motion Lightning McQueen doing like major catastrophic flips. And at that point, we're like, everybody's just sitting there like, oh my God, is he gonna die? What the hell is happening, man? And everybody's just freaking out. And the last thing that we get is this little message saying, from this moment, everything will change. And that's it. That's pretty much what we're getting with Cars 3 so far. Like, holy crap. Well, okay, now, even I was just sitting there, you know, okay, let me just say this, that, you know, honestly for me, I'm not a huge Cars fan. Like, I thought the first movie, it was good. Not great, but good. And the second movie, like, honestly, it's one of those very, very few animated films in which I have reviewed, and I look back at my review, and I was thinking to myself, am I too generous for this? Was I too generous on this? You know, like, honestly, like, I gave Cars 2 a 6 out of 10, which, honestly, I'm seriously questioning it now. But yeah, no, but like looking into this, like, holy crap. Like, you could definitely tell that they are taking a dark, dark turn with this. And you know, like, I do have a little bit of a theory to why everybody's pretty much freaking out with this Cars 3 teaser trailer. Okay, like, hear me out. Like, yes, of course. Like, everybody knows that the big thing that really caught everybody off guard was mostly the change of tone. And that's mostly, like, where we go from Cars 2, where we have this goofy little Mater spy adventure that's mostly geared for kids. And then we just suddenly switch it up to this, where Lightning McQueen is in critical danger and he could possibly die. So yeah, there is that tone shift. But there is another reason, and I do have a bit of a theory, but, like, I think the reason why everybody's freaking out over this, and, like, they're showing major concerns and major intrigue about Cars 3, is because, sure, not many people like Cars, like the Cars franchise in general, but I don't think there's enough people who legitimately hate Cars to the point that they want to see the characters dead. Like, okay, yes, sure. The Cars movies are the weakest Pixar films. But in terms of movies in general, they're definitely not the worst, you know? Like, you're not gonna find many people who would even categorize the first Cars movie as legitimately bad. Like, most of them will say that it's either, like, meh or okay. Like, you don't really see that much hate that's been put onto either, like, Lightning McQueen or even with Mater, down to the point that they want to see the death of these characters. Like, even I have to admit that I remember when I watched the first Cars movie, Lightning McQueen, I find that Lightning McQueen was a major dick, but at least he had a bit of a change of heart. So, honestly, at the end, I still kind of have a bit of a spite of him, but it's not, like, a hate that's still strong enough to wish him dead. Like, honestly, if you would tell me that they would kill off someone like Sid from Ice Age or Johnny from Hotel Transylvania, I wouldn't care less, to be honest, because those characters definitely deserve death for the sheer amount of stupidity and arguably could single-handedly destroy the entire films. But with this, like, I don't find Mater to be, not Mater, but I don't find Lightning McQueen to be such a hateable character to the point that he deserves death or what he deserves with this, you know? Honestly, I wouldn't even wish that to Mater. Like, if that was Mater doing all these flips and stuff like that, you know, honestly, I would seriously be concerned. I would still have the same reaction. I wouldn't even wish Mater death, you know? And especially with the factor that, mostly the Disney park goers, like, especially like if you go into Disney's California Adventure, like you would have Cars Land, and there is the attraction Radiator Springs, which is now one of the biggest attractions at Disneyland, which is definitely beloved, and a lot of people really like that. You don't even have to like the Cars movies in order to appreciate like Cars Land or Radiator Springs. A lot of people really enjoy that ride. So the hate on the Cars franchise, it's not really big enough to, you know, to wish any of the characters in their death or anything like that, you know? Sure, like I said before, it may be the weakest Pixar films, but they're not the worst films in general. They're still better than, like, any of the Ice Age movies that Blue Sky throws out. It's better than any of the Sony animation movies that they throw out. You know, it's still better than a lot of films that have been released, just saying. And that's probably the biggest thing why everybody is just showing so much concern with what's going on with Lightning McQueen. But then again, that could be just my little theory, and it could be more the aspect of the major tone shift. You know, like, I did think about it, and I feel like what they did with the teaser trailer here for Cars 3, this would pretty much be like the equivalent if they would actually release the teaser trailer for Toy Story 3, and they would pretty much only show the incinerator scene. Like, imagine if that would happen, if that were actually the teaser trailer for Toy Story 3. Everybody would flip their crap and lose their mind. And that's pretty much what we got here with Cars 3. But the one thing I will definitely say for sure, it absolutely grabbed my attention. Like, non-Cars fans like myself is looking at this, and now we're just wondering, what the fridge happened to Lightning McQueen? Is he okay? And if we look upon these two trailers, I think that's pretty much why the Cars 3 teaser trailer is a lot more successful than what we got with Smurfs Lost Village, because there's pretty much that change of tone that we pretty much don't know what's going to happen with the fate of these characters. And honestly, it's that element of what we don't know that makes Cars 3 superior than Smurfs The Lost Village in terms of their trailers. It's because, like I said before, with Smurfs The Lost Village, when you look onto that trailer, it's pretty much something that is very straightforward, and there's a very high chance that what we see is pretty much what we're gonna get. You know, this is gonna be no different than what we got this year with the Angry Birds movie, Trolls and Storks. But with Cars 3, we only managed to get Lightning McQueen in critical danger. And I would have to say, technically, like looking back into the Cars films, this is technically not the first time that this would happen to a character in Cars. Because technically, there actually is a lot of death and a lot of critical damage. Like, in Cars 2, there are a lot of cars that would end up getting axed off. And even in the first Cars, like when you look into the final race between the blue guy, Lightning McQueen, and the green guy, like the blue guy who's supposed to be the champion, like he pretty much went through the exact same thing, like what Lightning McQueen is going through in the Cars 3 teaser trailer. So this is not the first time, but still, it does leave a massive impact, the fact that it is happening to the main character of the entire franchise. So it is pretty insane to think about. But still, like, the element of what's, like, we don't know what's gonna happen with Lightning McQueen is what kind of, like, kept it in our minds about this movie. That's how it immediately grabbed our intrigue. And what's actually very interesting I want to mention is that I actually did a little poll on my personal Twitter, on Animat505. I decided to look upon, and go and ask the people which one do they think is the better trailer, or which was the one that really caught your intrigue, Cars 3 or Smurfs Lost Village. And I got the result right here, and out of more than 250 votes, 83% of people actually voted for Cars 3, while Smurfs Lost Village only gathered up 17%. And honestly, that's actually pretty interesting, I must say. Even though, like, technically, on a poll for more than 250 people, that doesn't sound much, but for something that I actually did and a lot of people responded like that, you know, for me, that actually sounds amazing. But it actually does say a lot that more than 4 out of 5 people, yeah, like I would say technically more than 4 out of 5 people would watch both these trailers, and they would say that Cars 3 is a lot more intriguing because there's the element of what you don't know. Now, technically, this is, you know, some could say that it's a bit unfair to compare a teaser trailer that's pretty much less than a minute than with a full trailer, which is pretty much more than 2 minutes. But in a way, with what we got with Cars 3, this is still even better than the teaser trailer of Smurfs the Lost Village, because like you could definitely tell that with that one, it's still like you could still see the goofiness, still the comedy, and still the colorful, subtly cartoony animation style. But with this one, like you could definitely tell that Cars 3 is definitely going in a dark edge. You know, and it absolutely did caught my intrigue to know more about what's going to happen with Cars 3. So who knows what's pretty much going to happen, but we will only wait for the two movies to be released when Smurfs the Lost Village will be coming out on April 2017, while Cars 3 will be coming out in June. Now, for our next story, this is going to be a little bit of a connection to one of my previous stories from the last episode, where I talked about the submitted animated films that are qualifying in order to get a nomination for Best Animated Feature at the Oscars, considering there are 27 of them, and we pretty much listed down which ones we know are going to be nominated, which ones we know are not going to be nominated, and which ones could be nominated. Well, apparently this week, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences did something a little bit similar. Now, they have a total of 70 animated shorts that are pretty much submitted in order to get that nomination for Best Animated Short. Well, the Academy pretty much took them all, and now they have narrowed it down to 10 of them. I actually have the list here through my source on Cartoon Brew, and let's take a look together to see which ones are pretty much going to be competing for Best Animated Short at the Oscars. And so, the nominees for Best Animated Short at the Oscars are Blind Vaisha by Theodore Ushev from National Film Board of Canada, Borrow Time, Andrew Coates and Hamu Lihaj from Quorum Films, Happy End by Jan Saska from FAMU, Film and Television of the Academy of Performing Arts in Prague. The Head Vanishes by Frank Dion, by Papi 3D Productions, the National Film Board of Canada, and Arte France Cinema Department. Inner Workings by Leo Matsuda from Walt Disney Animation Studios. Once Upon a Line by Alicia Jacina from University of Southern California. Pear Cider and Cigarettes by Robert Valley from Massive Swerve Studios and Passion Pictures Animation. Pearl by Patrick Osborne from Google Spotlight Stories and Evil Eye Pictures. Piper, Alan Barilaro. Oh yeah, okay, sorry about that. Let me redo that. Piper by Aaron Barilaro from Pixar Animation Studios. And finally, Sous tes doigts by Marie-Christine Cortez from Vivement Lundi and Novanima. And so I decided to take a look into these animated shorts individually. Some that I have actually seen, but most of them I have yet to actually see it, considering that these would mostly appear just in festivals or you would have to pay for it in order to check it out. Eventually, I will see these animated shorts eventually once the actual list of nominations would actually occur. But I decided to check one by one. And first off, Blind Vaisha. I feel like this could actually have some potential right here. Because the thing is, the National Film Board of Canada, in terms of Best Animated Short, they're a massive powerhouse. They're a legit threat to Disney and Pixar. And with the way that they executed Blind Vaisha, it looks like it does have that strange and unique art style, and it also has a compelling story, so that could actually be used to their advantage, and that could actually be a bit of a turn on for many of the people who are listing the nominees, so that could actually have a good chance. Next up, we also got Borrowed Time. Now, I have actually discussed this in the animation podcast, and this is the one that I'm definitely rooting for in order to get an Oscar nomination. Oh my god. I haven't seen all of these animated shorts yet, but so far this is the one I'm definitely rooting for to win. Like, holy crap, it is so good. Next one, we got Happy End. Honestly, I don't really see it that much get a nomination from the trailer that I've seen. Oh, by the way, this is the one thing that I want to mention is that, even though I have not seen the entirety of these animated shorts, the list that I got on Cartoon Brew, they also put in the trailer, so we do get a little bit of an idea of what these animated shorts are about, at the very least. So, I do have a bit of an idea of what these shorts are individually, but I don't know them fully. I haven't seen them all yet. But going back to Happy End, honestly, I don't know, really. I don't really see it get that much of a nomination unless there's more to a story to it, maybe. Then there's another one, The Head Vanishes, and that's technically another one with the National Film Board of Canada, but I do have a bit of a feeling that Blind Vaisha might be the superior one in this case, and Blind Vaisha could actually have more of a chance than The Head Vanishes, so I'm just going to lay it there. Maybe they'll put in both, but we'll see, I don't know. Inner Workings. I'm going to be very honest with you guys. This is the one that I know is actually kind of weak. I do get with what they're trying to do with Inner Workings. Like, they want to do something more in line with their, trying to make like a computer animated version of their more abstract animated shorts from like the 50s and stuff like that. But honestly, I just don't feel like it works out, especially when the plot is a little bit weak as well, considering it's trying to copy Paper Man and add in elements of Inside Out, but with organs. So I honestly don't really know about this one. I don't know if it's going to get a chance, or maybe they are, but maybe they are going to put it in because Disney, but I'm honestly not sure. Once Upon a Line, this could get a chance, considering that last year they also put it in, what was it? The World of Tomorrow by Don Hirschfeld. Like, it looks like it could be more in line with that, but it's not as, metaphorical in a way. Like, there's no hidden message with this one. It's more because of the minimalist animation that they tried to incorporate here, and, tried to do something a little bit similar to The Dot and the Line by Chuck Jones in a way, but I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know. We'll see. Then also, hold on. There we go. We got Parasiter and Cigarettes, which looks like it's going to be one that is going to be more like they want to try to make it dark and greedy and see more like the dark life of what happens in a country that is Chinese or Japanese, but mostly looking into the dark life of this guy that's living there. Maybe, I don't know, honestly. Pearl by Patrick Osborne. Now, I just want to mention that this is the same Patrick Osborne that actually won an Oscar for Disney's Feast, the story of that little dog who likes to eat a lot, the animated short before Big Hero 6. So that might actually have a chance. We could actually be seeing this in there, considering Patrick Osborne's familiarity with the Oscars. So that I wouldn't be surprised that it could actually get a nomination. Then we also got Piper. And I just want to say right now, if there has to be one Disney short that has to get a nomination, I'm absolutely rooting for Piper because... it doesn't happen all the time, but even I have to admit, this is freaking adorable. And the animation is so godforsaken gorgeous. I absolutely love this short, and I'm definitely rooting for Piper in order to get a nomination in this case. Like, I'm definitely going for Piper. And then finally, we got Sous tes doigts. This is another one that looks like, honestly, Sous tes doigts is gonna get a direct competition with Parasiter and Cigarettes. Like, this is gonna be one kind of similar to Piper and Inner Workings. Like, it's either gonna be like they would have to put in either Sous tes doigts or Parasiter and Cigarettes. So that's something that I can imagine. Okay, so now that we've pretty much narrowed down all 10 of the shortlist, let's try to take a look at them one by one, and let me go and try to predict my own little list and see if I would get correct. And honestly, I am definitely unsure about myself. This isn't like in the best animated feature category where I know that there are some that are going to be nominated and I know some are not. So this is going to be a wild guess for me, but if I would have to predict the actual nominees for best animated short, I would think the list would be Blind Vaisha, Borrowed Time, Piper, Pearl, and if there's one more, Parasiter and Cigarettes. That's pretty much my list right there. Like, that's pretty much my guess. Blind Vaisha, Borrowed Time, Parasiter and Cigarettes, Pearl, and Piper. But am I going to be correct or not? Even I don't freaking know, but that's pretty much my guess. But we will wait and see if I'm going to be right or wrong, or at least how many did I get right, when the nominees will all be announced on January 24th, 2017. Now for our next story, we got an idiot that's going to jail. And I know that may seem actually a very harsh starter, but trust me, I have no respect for this man whatsoever, and I'm glad that this guy is going to be finally put to godforsaken prison. And what I am talking about, to give you guys a little bit of a clue of what's pretty much happening, let me take you back a little bit way early on in the beginning of this year. In the beginning of 2016, that I talked about a man named James Gordon. Now, if you don't know the story, Jane Gordon actually thought up of this get-rich-quick scheme by suing DreamWorks Animation for $12 million by claiming that he thought up of the idea of Kung Fu Panda. And not only that, but he also tried to bring up evidence with some concept art that he claimed that he made in the early 90s. So he thought up of this idea about this kung fu fighting panda that dresses himself like a ninja, and his assistant would be this little red panda. But interestingly enough, it actually turns out that not only were the drawings not made in the early 90s, but it turns out that Jane Gordon actually straight up retraced the panda drawings from a 1996 Lion King coloring book. No freaking joke. And so what's pretty much going to be happening is that, like, the judge, the jury, and everybody pretty much saw right through this freaking idiot. And it turns out that now he has been convicted with wire fraud and perjury. And his sentence is going to be right at the tail end of March 2017. And he could actually be carrying, he could be carrying a sentence of up to 25 years in prison. Now, if I can go a little bit more onto the case that happened, going into my source here again on Cartoon Brew, it has set, it has stated that, hold on. I lost my train of thought, Fudge Nabbit. Okay, yeah. Okay, there we go. Okay, Jonathan Zavin, one of DreamWorks' lead lawyers at Loeb & Loeb, testified during the U.S. government's trial about the unprecedented fraud that Gordon attempted to commit in his lawsuit against DreamWorks. "I've never had a case that involved this kind of exploitation of evidence, this kind of destruction of evidence," Zavin said on direct examination. "This was absolutely unique in my experience." But on top of that, where was it? Oh, there's also this little piece right here that's important to mention. While Gordon had actually created a concept called Panda Power, he revised the concept after seeing the trailer for Kung Fu Panda in early 2018 and re-registered it with the copyright offices in May 2018 as Kung Fu Panda Power, immediately before the May 2008 as Kung Fu Panda Power, immediately after the June 2008 release of DreamWorks' animated feature. On top of that, as they have, Gordon ruse to bilk DreamWorks out of $12 million also involved destroying digital evidence and lying around, lying about it under oath. During DreamWorks' during discovery related to the lawsuit, DreamWorks attorneys unearthed evidence that on April 10th, 2012, Gordon had deliberately erased computer files holding material related to the lawsuit. In fact, Gordon installed and used a program called Permanent Eraser to remove files and then delete Permanent Eraser itself on April 13th, 2012. So, as you can clearly see, the dude pretty much tried to think up of this get-rich-quick scam by claiming that he is the original creator of Kung Fu Panda. And what's actually very interesting, one important thing to mention is that one guy who actually really did help solve the case was, believe it or not, a MIDI of Cartoon Brew. He was actually working as the art expert for DreamWorks' legal department, and he actually made the sudden notice that the little red panda character has a bit of strong similarities to Timon from The Lion King. And that actually brought up the idea for DreamWorks' legal team to go and buy as much Lion King stuff as possible for, like, they pretty much bought so many things on eBay, and then they ended up buying this coloring book in which they have discovered that apparently Jamie Gordon completely ripped off in order to make his freaking drawings. It's crazy. It's really crazy. Now, some of you might be curious to know regarding the fact that, considering that we're talking about, like, pandas and stuff like that, how is it that the dude was capable of taking, like, a Lion King coloring book and retrace it and suddenly bring up this, like, panda and stuff like that? Well, interestingly enough, I looked down into the comments section into this article on Cartoon Brew, and many people, like, there are some people who actually discovered, and I think the credit I would have to say is from Inkin1969, and he actually stated that specifically what this coloring book came from is actually more of a print version of an episode of the Timon and Pumbaa TV series where they went into China and they found a lost panda cub. You know, which actually does make a lot of sense, actually. And, you know, like, the proof is pretty much right here that you could tell the dude pretty much retraced, like, a lot of these characters from the coloring book in order to create his own characters. But what is actually interesting is that he does also include his own drawings as well, like personal drawings that were not traced. And yeah, they look like crap, to be honest. Like, there is a clear, like, you go into the article on Cartoon Brew, there is actually a clear distinction between which ones that Jane Gordon actually drew himself and which one did he completely trace from the coloring book. And honestly, like, hearing the, and you know the worst part about this is that this is entirely both a waste of time and money for DreamWorks Animation. Going back into my source, by the time the case was dismissed, DreamWorks Animation and co-defendant Paramount Pictures had spent nearly $3 million to defend themselves, a fee that they were unable to recover due to the dismissal agreement. So unfortunately, this ultimately came into a freaking waste of time, and they lost money, which is something that DreamWorks cannot necessarily afford, considering the stance that they are currently in. Well, maybe not. Well, at least, like, with the fact that Comcast purchasing DreamWorks Animation did help out a bit, but still, like, it's not necessarily good if DreamWorks Animation would have to spend money for stupid things like this. And honestly, these cases, they piss me off to no end, because they're not, because the people doing these things, like, sue the big companies in order to get money, claiming that, oh, they're the creators of this, they're nothing but idiots, and they're freaking scammers thinking that they can get a get rich quick scheme by profiting off of other people's success. Seriously, this pisses me off to no end. And you know, the one thing that I know that all these idiots, like, they're just doing it just for the money. Like, they're also, like, a bunch of liars. Like, I highly doubt that anybody doing this would actually be saying the truth in here. Honestly, like, the thing is, think about it. Every single time that this case would happen, it's always towards the more successful films. You know, you're not going to hear a case that somebody would claim that they, like, a big studio stole the concept for something like Space Chimps or Surf's Up or The Nut Job. That doesn't happen. That does not exist whatsoever, because those movies, they're not successful. They're not profitable. You know, they're not big name franchises. But then when you look upon the big franchises, the ones that are actually successful, like Kung Fu Panda, or Cars, or Monsters, Inc., or Ratatouille, or whatever, like, any movie from Pixar, or DreamWorks, or Disney, that outcomes all these idiots that are gonna go and sue them. And trust me, this would actually frequently happen. Disney had to go and face several of these just for Frozen alone. And you would be embarrassed to hear the absolute stupidity that goes into them. Like, they would go into desperate measures just to make these weird comparisons with the movie. And it's ridiculous. It pisses me off to no end. Like, they're only aiming for, like, these godforsaken successful movies. Like, Kung Fu Panda is a big successful franchise. Like, we got the third movie that came out that became a hit. And, like, you got this idiot right here that's trying to swindle off DreamWorks money because, like, he wants to get the riches for his own, claiming that he, like, and plus the fact that he thinks he can get away by saying that he's the original creator of freaking, of Godforsaken Kung Fu Panda. Honestly, like, the dude definitely deserves to go to prison just for his sheer stupidity. Now, the one thing I want to say, though, is that a lot of people might be alarmed regarding the fact that he could be facing up to 25 years in prison. But I just want to mention right now, like, technically, yeah, like, the dude is a fraud. He is a liar. He is an idiot. But 25 years could be a bit of an exaggeration, right? Well, keep in mind, though, the key word with what I said before was up to 25 years in prison. It could be highly possible that he's only going to be in there for just a fraction of it. Maybe he's just going to stay for like 15, 12, 10, or maybe even just 5 years. That's it. So it may not sound as serious, but the dude will absolutely be taking charges. And overall, I'm just glad that, like, idiots like him would go to jail. And I just hope that, like, it could pretty much stop, or people can actually learn their lesson that this kind of scam never works. You can't just sue a big company and claim that you're the creator of this and think that you'll end up with money at the end. No, that's not how it works. Big companies, they have amazing lawyers, and they will take you down no matter what. Now, for our next story, we are going to go and take a break from animation and look into video games, which technically does have some strong tie-ins with animation, considering the amount of effort that the artists and many of the creators in there, they would have to go to in order to make these games and stuff like that. And especially with this one, I'm sure that many people in the animation community are really excited for this to come out. And I am talking, of course, about The Last Guardian, from the same people that brought us games like Ico and the gaming masterpiece that is Shadow of the Colossus. For the longest time, The Last Guardian was pretty much, it was always the toast of E3. They would always mention about this game that they are making for The Last Guardian, and they've been going on and on for it, but that's the problem. They've been going on and on without releasing the actual freaking game, you know? It's like, it's kind of like Kingdom Hearts 3 in a way, where they keep talking about it, but we don't know when it's going to be released. That changed, however, when this year they finally announced that it's going to actually be released on October 25th, 2016. Well, actually, that did not happen, but it's actually right around the corner. They say that it's gonna actually have a December 6th release, so at least it'll be there on time for the holidays. So who knows? Maybe gaming fans could actually get something under their stocking, or actually under the Christmas tree, not under the stocking. What I want to talk about is that PlayStation Japan has actually released a clip of the first 9 minutes of the game of The Last Guardian, where it would start off with the little boy named, this little boy, like, he would actually go and see this giant griffin character who actually acts more like a dog named Trico, which, if you do think about it, I kind of see what they kind of did with that name. He befriends a griffin named Trico by trying to release him and, bringing him towards his adventure. And you do get a bit of an idea of how the game works, where there is a bit of a factor in terms of puzzle solving in order to have the giant griffin to pretty much follow you, and how he could help you out throughout your adventures, where if you end up getting caught by guards or bad humans and stuff like that, Trico is going to come in and pretty much, like, ward them off or just, like, bash them to bits. And then right afterwards, you also do see that there are other griffins as well, but they're kind of like mind controlled by the villain of the game. We don't know who it is just yet, but yeah, most of it looks like it's going to be more of a puzzle solver with some small elements that do reference some of the other games like Ico and Shadow of the Colossus, where you do have a bit of that story narrative of Ico, but at the same time, you do have a little bit of the mechanics, like a bit of the puzzle solving and like giant creatures and climbing elements in the same veins of Shadow of the Colossus. And looking into the game, it does look a bit interesting. And I think fans of Team Ico would definitely do get a kick out of this. And if I may speak for the animation community, this is definitely, well, I'm not speaking for, but if I may speak to the animation community, that's what I mean. It could actually be an interesting game to actually analyze and check out, but more specifically to the Trico character. That's going to be a fascinating character to examine, to, check out his movements and the different types of animals that they're trying to mix. Especially, like, when you see how he would, like, how Trico would try to flap his wings, how his behavior is more like a dog. you know, it's a great example and a great source if you want to go and try to create a creature that mixes different elements of different animals and put them into one. You could definitely try out you could definitely see The Last Guardian a bit as a source of inspiration to know what you can do. And you can even see a bit of the skeletal structure to see how it can work in a way. What is actually very interesting is that Trico does not have any teeth. Like, you could tell that the skeletal structure of Trico's skull is more bird-like, because it, like, when he opens his mouth, you don't really see much teeth. In a way, like, his nozzle acts more a bit as a beak in a way. So, like, it's not just on the outside of how they mix animals, but also on the inside. So I think on that front, it could be a great source of inspiration of what you can do with mixing animal, like how to truly mix animals in order to create this full-on creature. So that could be an interesting thing to analyze. But also, story-wise, I do get a little bit of a feeling that this is a bit of a mix of something like The Iron Giant and The Rescuers Down Under, in a way, where you actually got a mixture where you got this little boy who befriends this giant creature, rather it be Marahute in Down Under or the giant in The Iron Giant. So you actually do get another example of how you can go on a big adventure, but also look into the analysis onto, like, the relationship between the boy and this giant animal creature. So that could be another careful examination. So overall, I would say for animation fans and for aspiring animators and whatnot, The Last Guardian could be a game that you could definitely check out to give you some ideas, both story-wise and conceptually, in order to create some creatures of your own. And if you are interested in getting the game, then you could wait until December 6th, when the game will actually be released. And so, finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. Now, for Matt's Pick of the Week, I actually don't really have a story to talk about. Instead, I want to go into a bit of an editorial, in a sense, because this is something that I want to talk about, and it's something that I've kind of noticed that it has to be mentioned. I don't see a lot of people talking about it, but I'm starting to see a little bit of a pattern, and in a way, it's kind of annoying me a little bit. So I have to mention this. Now, this is actually related to the new movie that has been released, Moana. I've seen the film, and it is fantastic. I loved it. It definitely is great, and it honestly really did meet up to my expectations. Not as phenomenal as Zootopia, but still, it is definitely fantastic, and I applaud the people at Walt Disney Animation Studios for their tremendous work with the film. The story was highly engaging, the animation is absolutely beautiful, the characters are a lot of fun, and the songs are really fantastic. Like, I knew I had to immediately go and grab that soundtrack right after watching it. I remember I even came out just, you know, singing and dancing to some of the songs. It really was a lot of fun. But the thing is that beforehand, I had to put a bit of my guard down. Like, I remember beforehand, I was lowering my expectations. At one point, I was thinking this was my most anticipated film of the year, and I had to pretty much lower my, lower it down to maybe it could be just a good movie. And the reason why I say that, it's not necessarily the movie itself, but because of the freaking trailers, man! I'm starting to get tired of all those trailers by Walt Disney Animation Studios. They're really not doing justice to the animated films that actually are. Seriously, I feel like there's something wrong with these trailers that they're not actually presenting with what the animated, with what these animated films actually are. Like, You know, for with a movie of this caliber, of something like Zootopia or Moana, you'd think that they would it would be so easy to try to sell, like, look at all the amazing things that we have for this feature film. If you want more, then go check out the movie. You know, like, you'd think they would do that job, but no, they wouldn't. I mean, I remember when I saw the trailer for Moana, I thought it was cute. You know, like, it looks fun, it looks cute, it looks like it could be this fun family adventure that mostly focuses on the comedy of Maui. But no, it's not really like that, actually. Like, when you look at the film, like, sure, Maui is the comic relief of this feature film along with Hei Hei, but the thing is, with Maui, he's a character that has a lot more depth in him. You know, there's a lot more to Maui than just being a goofy comic relief in this movie. But also on top of that, like, when you think, like, I remember one big turnoff for me was the coconut people, or I guess their actual name is the Kakamora. And, you know, I thought they would just be dumb, goofy sidekicks, but it actually turns out, like, when you watch the movie, they are a legit threat. What was interesting through my research, I discovered that apparently John Musker and Ron Clements actually deliberately made a Mad Max tribute with these Kakamora characters. And yeah, like, they do actually legitimately seem like a major threat in the movie, and they actually do seem pretty cool. But oddly enough, the trailers don't do justice at all to them. And not to mention the musical numbers. Like, that, like, barely any of them actually show up in here. Like, the trailers do present We Know the Way. That's pretty much the big trailer song that they present, like, ever since the teaser trailer was released. Okay, I get that. Yeah, they did that. But, I mean, I really like the song, but it's not... That's not the strongest one. I mean, like, the best songs, hands down, like, they could have done, like, if they did it with You're Welcome or How Far I'll Go or something like that, it would have been really awesome. You know, it would have really amplified the trailer to make it more convincing to go see the movie. And even when you look at the previous Disney films, like, you think about Zootopia, like, watching the trailers, no one would ever expect that Zootopia would be this really mature and thought-provoking animated film where it actually discusses about discrimination and bigotry. You know, like, this was, like, that aspect was never mentioned in the trailer. Again, it's just showing this family-friendly adventure which could focus more on the comedy and the action and just, like, you know, cartoon animals just having fun. But this is one of those rare Disney films in actuality that could be geared more towards adults than it is to kids. Or maybe just, you know, the kids are just going to enjoy, you know, animal, you know, like cartoony animals coming to life, while the adults could actually appreciate the message and the story that actually goes behind it. There's like so much depth onto Zootopia that makes it like one of the best animated features in a long time. And the trailers don't do that. And I mean, they've been doing this for so long. I mean, even way back when you think about, like, even Frozen is actually a great example. Like, I remember before the days, before Frozen was released, a lot of people were more doubtful towards it. Remember in 2015? Remember the name that we actually called Frozen? A lot of people were saying it was Tangled on Ice. I remember that day. But then, there was at one point when Disney actually released the trailer for it. And I remember, you know what the trailer was? It didn't show stuff like Let It Go. It didn't really show much about Elsa or Anna or Kristoff or any of those characters. We mostly saw this little cartoon of Olaf and Sven slipping through the ice in order to get a carrot. That's the most that we got on that trailer. That, you know, and that's supposed to be Frozen? Like, no one would ever guess that through that trailer alone, Frozen would become this huge phenomenon that would win two Oscars, and it would currently be the highest grossing animated feature of all time. You know? No one would ever guess that. And even in Wreck-It Ralph. That's another one, actually, that, like, that's probably the best example where the trailer kind of screwed over the movie, but only in a minor way. It didn't affect it that much, but it's a bit minor. Where, like, you see in the trailers, that was actually something that a lot of people really got hyped up about, and people really were excited to actually see video game characters like Bowser, Dr. Robotnik or Eggman, Sonic and Bison, Zangief, and all those people. They were really excited to see those characters appear in a Disney movie. They only appeared in the first act, and that's pretty much it. Like, you don't really get that much else. But I mean, like, sure, the rest of the movie that we got, like, once the video game references are over, like, they're fantastic. They're great. Like, you still get a really good movie, but you don't get that promise of, like, having so many video game characters all in one movie. It's not like the Who Framed Roger Rabbit of video games here. But, you know, I was thinking about it, and even though, like, there must be a problem with these Disney trailers. Like, they're not doing that good of a job to really sell these Disney movies. But then I thought to myself, there was something that really did contradict myself. Like, there must be something. Like, it's either they're not doing a good job, or they could legitimately be doing that on purpose, and they are geniuses for it. Like, think about it. Okay, like, here's the thing. Like, let's go back onto Zootopia and think how they advertised it there. Now, if you think about if they would be more straightforward, kind of like with what we got with Smurfs The Lost Village, if they were more straightforward with what the movie would be, and they would advertise the aspect that this would be a film about anti-discrimination and anti-bigotry, do you think it would sell as well as it would right now? Most likely not. You know? It probably wouldn't. And if you would actually, and like, you know, and that's another thing. Like, if you think about Moana, if they would actually go and even try to straight up go and advertise some of the best parts, like, you know, like if they show more of Maui versus Taka, or they would put in the background, How Far I'll Go, would it sell as well? Maybe not, actually, because you've already gotten the best aspects onto the trailer, so you might know a bit of what you would get. The thing is, what I'm trying to say is that they could deliberately not, the trailers could deliberately not show much of the elements of the movie to keep the best parts for the feature film, to make that, like, a huge surprise once you come see it, and, like, you would be blown away, and it turns out to be a lot better than you would probably expect. You know, and that's the thing. I remember when I was talking, like, I had this conversation before with my friends. You know, we were actually discussing that one of them wasn't really interested in watching Moana because he wasn't really interested in what's pretty much going on. I mean, let's face it, even in the first teaser trailer, the most that we got was Maui doing a traditional dance. And even if people don't understand the context of it, it's just Maui doing a goofy dance. But nobody ever expected that Zootopia would be this amazing just by the trailer alone, so we would have to wait and see. And it turns out I was right. You know, it actually Moana actually did turn out to be amazing. And, you know, that could actually be the thing, is that they could be doing that on purpose to look like, so that audiences could lower their guard, and then once the movie comes out, it turns out to be absolutely phenomenal. And it's godforsaken working. I mean, if you look into the reviews of, like, Zootopia and now even Moana, it's, like, massively highly praised. And it deserves to be so, you know? And that, you know, like, keeping that element, and I think, like, keeping that element of surprise is actually really effective, where it's only once the movie is actually released where like it would immediately pique the curiosity of people. It's like, wait, really? This movie, Zootopia, Moana, it really is that good? I don't know. The trailer didn't show much, but all right, I'll take your word for it. I guess I'll go see it. And they would immediately get fans out of it. And that could be the gene, you know, that could be the sign, like the real science behind Disney's marketing in terms of their animated films. Now, I can't really speak for other ones like, you know, like Pixar, really. Like, technically, yeah, that is Disney as well. But I don't know if that would apply onto that as well, because usually Pixar trailers, sometimes they can be a bit straightforward with what you're going to get. Like, they're usually fine with the way that they're marketing their films with the trailers alone. Like, maybe, like, okay, sure. Maybe what we're going to get with Cars 3 won't be as necessarily as harsh as we got in the teaser trailer, but who knows? But I would have to say, overall, with the trailers, like, sure. Maybe they're not doing, like, it's either... They're just not really that good at their jobs in order to advertise it, or they're doing this on purpose in order to keep all the best surprises for when you see the movie. And for someone who loves surprises like myself, that's something I could truly admire. And that will be all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com. All you have to do is just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go and rate and review this episode. You would be absolutely wonderful if you do that. And if you have listened to my podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button in our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next time for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!